Welcome to B2B Healthy Copy Talks, the podcast that blends together marketing strategy, copywriting, and messaging tactics for the B2B fitness, health, and wellness industries. As a former personal trainer, award-winning writer for major health and fitness magazines, and an online fitness course creator, I know firsthand the challenges of marketing within these industries. So whether you're a seasoned copywriter, a savvy marketer, or an industry expert, you'll find valuable insights in every episode. From B2B SaaS providers and marketing experts to fitness entrepreneurs, I'll bring you interviews and discussions that spark creativity, drive growth, and jack up your professional game. We'll explore the specific challenges within the B2B world, how to stand out among the competition, and increase conversions in every area. Let's dive in. My guest today is Mike G. Hansen. Mike is a serial entrepreneur, a venture partner, and strategic advisor in the health, fitness, and technology industry. He has over 25 years of experience across nearly 20 market segments and investment groups, and has done business with over 100 brands. He's considered a thought leader in our industry, covering top trends in providing key insights as he drives innovation and growth forward with corporations and entrepreneurs. So Mike says that he's been in 5 to 6 different kinds of natural disasters. He does not sound like someone you want to be around if you're like trying to enjoy yourself. So I'm going to ask him about that. But we are really going to get into this huge, major trend that's happening in the fitness and wellness industry, which is kind of getting more into holistic fitness practices and how this affects corporate clients as well as individual consumers. So let's get into it. Welcome, Mike. I'm so happy to have you on the podcast. I've been looking forward to this for a while. I appreciate you taking the time.
Appreciate you having me. It's been good to meet you.
Yeah. And so I always ask people, you know, what are some interesting things about you? And you said a fun fact about you is that you've been in 5 to 6 different types of natural disasters. And I have to ask about that because what kind of natural disasters were you in?
Yeah, great question. So for me, obviously I live in Florida, so I'm in hurricanes all the time, right? So they will call that number one. I grew up in the Midwest, so tornadoes are pretty much always there in the summer, wow, right? Lived in Colorado during one of the big fires that came into Boulder, right? So that would be obviously another one. And then the thing that gets me a little bit further in natural disasters is I was born in Washington State, and I lived about 15 to 30 minutes from Mount St. Helens when it blew up.
Oh.
And then the other one would be when I was visiting my father in a summer out in California when those bridges collapsed. I was about 10 miles from the epicenter of that back, I guess that was in the 90s.
Wow.
So I think the only thing I have left is a typhoon, right? And a tsunami. And I don't plan to be in any of those anytime soon.
No. Yeah. So people might be afraid to be around you, right? Because it's like, oh, here's Mike.
I survived though, right? So you can't stop natural disasters. You can only live through them.
Yeah, it's pretty scary. I used to live in California, and I've been in some small earthquakes, and they were so scary. I can't imagine some of the ones that are happening now. Like, I'm just so glad I'm in Arizona. but yeah, so speaking of earth-shaking events, I mean, the whole thing with fitness that I love so much, and I've been in this for so many years, is that it's always evolving. It's always changing. And one of the things that you brought up in your post today on LinkedIn is about, because I wanted to get into that a little bit, the shift towards wellness. Can you talk a little bit about what you mean by that? Like, how is wellness the new fitness?
I believe we've gone through a paradigm shift with the consumer. And the way I think about a paradigm shift is these are consumer-driven behaviors that change the market. And there's nothing a company can do to change that. It's like when the world went to electric cars or is going to electric cars, right? And so these paradigm shifts happen. And within the fitness industry, I like to phrase it as we've gone from looking good to feeling good, right? And the way you treat a customer and the way you interact with products and services around that are very different. Because if you think about the things we did to look good, they didn't feel good to get there, right?
Strict
diets, hard workouts, pushing yourself. It's like hardcore athlete, right? On the feel good side, you're actually trying to fix injuries. You're trying to go there and get an endorphin release for the mind, right? you're doing more recovery, you're actually maybe not working out and you're stretching, right? And so that's a product and service change too. And that's really what's sort of taking place here. And everything is moving towards this, right? And whether wellness is the bridge between fitness and healthcare, TBD, whether it's its own thing, but obviously what also is driving this is science and exercise just went boom, mm-hmm. right? With obviously GLP and all these other types of things. And so we're seeing this sort of evolution into wellness.
And it sounds like you're saying that consumers are driving this, correct? So it's like, what do you mean by that? Like just what they're responding to or what they're asking about? How do you know?
Health span. Health span is probably a great way to think about this. So health spans, obviously people want to live longer mm-hmm. with quality. The two have to go hand in hand, right? It's not just about length, but people want more quality lives and be living longer. And that's very wellness oriented. Just because you have six pack abs doesn't make you live longer, right? It's the food you eat. It's the internal side. It's the mind, right? It's the true ecosystem of wellness, which is more than just appearance, right? And it actually probably is way more than just appearance. And that's the piece that's getting integrated in.
Hey there, fellow marketers. Before we dive back into the conversation, I've got a game changer for your content strategy. Imagine a world where the headache of coordinating, reviewing, and approving content for social media, blogs, and newsletters just disappeared. If you're struggling with team collaboration on content, I get it. We've all been there, and it's precisely why you need to hear about this tool. It's called Planable. Planable is revolutionizing and raising the bar on the way teams collaborate on content. Imagine crafting and seeing your posts exactly as they'll appear live across different platforms, all from one dashboard. And the beauty of Planable is it drastically cuts down the approval time for your posts. What used to take hours can now be wrapped up in minutes. Whether you call Planable your unfair advantage or a secret weapon in your content creation toolbox, it's changing the content collaboration game. With this beautifully designed interface, you'll wonder how you ever did content planning without it. So if you're ready to upgrade and streamline your approach to content creation, head over to planable.io and sign up for a free plan today. That's planable.io. And here's the cherry on top. Planable is giving you 30% off for the first 3 months when you upgrade to any plan that fits your needs. That's right, any plan. So all you need to do is use the code PLANABLE30 at checkout. That's PLANABLE, the number 30, at checkout. And you're all set to transform the way you manage your marketing content. That's PLANABLE30 to lock in your 30% discount for the first 3 months. And now back to our show. Do you think it's more like, has it moved along with generations as we've aged? Like I know what I used to look for in my 20s and 30s is completely different. Like I can't do those kind of workouts that I used to do. And it was like, you know, working out to you collapse literally, and, you know, competitions with your friends who can do, you know, more without like barfing. I mean, I just don't have any interest in that. Is it moving along with just the changing demographics too?
Millennials are leading the charge as it relates with the wellness push, which I sort of referenced in the post today. And then Gen Z is actually a very different sort of segment that's sort of the up and coming riser that we have to all prepare for, right? I think it's an interesting stat just to bring it out of wellness into reality of another context for us is like, I believe it's 29% of Gen Z would prefer to go to a gym and work out with somebody than go to a bar and drink, right? Back in the day, that was the thing, right? You went to a bar and you met somebody and you had a drink and that was the social part. So you've got this social aspect that's also being pulled into this. Mm-hmm. And when social and wellness and feeling good all started to intermix, and the thing that was in that article that I didn't talk about was that the social clubs are now becoming wellness clubs, and they talk about that. They're pulling out happy hour. They're pulling out some of the drinks in the bars, and they're bringing in some of these wellness-oriented services and products, and that's what people collaborate around. So when social becomes wellness, it's a big tide change.
And I can even see that, like, in the gyms that I've been in my whole life, and there's been so many different ones, there's always that social aspect to it. There always has been. And it depends on, you know, the age. Like now I don't look for it as much because I really just go in. I want to get in. I want to get out. And I think there's less socializing than there used to be. I mean, do you think that is? But then on the other hand, like you said, they're also opening, well, some gyms have juice bars and they have places specifically so that you can socialize.
It's a good question. I haven't really talked about the social fitness side of things as much. I personally am not a social person at the gym. I go to the gym almost every day. But it's also my break, right? Mm-hmm. And so my break is a brain break for me and a sort of peace break. So I think it also depends on the circumstances around the consumer, because there's definitely consumers where it is a social aspect. And I still hear that today. I don't know whether that's growing or shrinking, but I believe it has to be growing a little bit if people are using wellness and the gym in replacement of going to the bar with most things, because that's the social element, right? Mm-hmm. And so we're also seeing niches in that, right? So we got wellness clubs, longevity, anti-aging facilities, recovery studios.
Yeah.
So interestingly enough, as I introduced recovery in 2018 into a facility in a recovery studio, we had close to 1,500 square feet or so, somewhere in there. And what I noticed with that is, number one, I was really early, but number two is, about 85 to 90% of the people would come out of the studio and go to that room. And I would go sit in there with them with the Normatec on and different stuff of that nature. And we had everything. We had cryo, we had infrared saunas, we had Normatec, we had all the services people have today. And I would say, how is this? And they're like, awesome. I was like, have you ever done it before? They're like, nope. I said, do you know what you're doing? They said, nope. But they were all sitting there talking, doing this recovery. And what I was like, I said, this is the new social experience that's going to happen, where people come out of the class because they're all sweating and tired and they congregate here. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. One of the things I wanted to ask you about is there an educational component to that? Because as a personal trainer for like 20 years, I would have people, first of all, it was always amazing to me. You know, I get hired for a considerable amount of money and people will argue with me over the advice I give them. And in particular, I'm thinking of, you know, when someone gets hurt, they want to put heat on it. And I tell them that's the worst thing you can do because you're inflaming it, or they want to get a massage. I remember one client in particular who was just, he was just particularly argumentative with me all the time. And he had hurt his neck. And I worked out with him and his wife separately. And he said, you know, and his wife said to me, yeah, he's going to go get a massage because his neck is hurting. I said, tell him not to do that because he's going to make it worse. So she goes, you tell him. So I told him, and he didn't say anything to me. He went and got the massage and he was a wreck. I mean, it made it so much worse. So how do you, like, when it comes to these things, like the different treatments, because some of them are sort of treatments, the cryo and the, like, how are you, is there an educational element to teach people how to use it, like within these facilities? You know, of that.
Definitely. I mean, it's, I don't think it's any different than what a personal trainer is educating somebody on how to use some of the equipment, right? Because you've got a technical side, you've got a physical benefits side, you've got a variety of benefits and things of that nature that come into play. And so we had to have somebody in there. So we manned it in order to be able to have somebody answer questions for somebody, right? Because even if you had a productized list of services, if you don't know what is that thing means in the food you're ordering, like, how do you know, right? So you still have to sort of explain that piece, especially back in the day. And I think we're still there at this point where people probably don't understand that. And then also at the same time, is if you're there because you're truly trying to recovery, there's another piece to this, which is sleep and what you eat, right? That's truly what helps you recover. And these other things are supplemental. So if you think that one thing is going to fix the ultimate problem, you're probably wrong. And so it gives this opportunity to sort of introduce people to the holistic world mm-hmm. that we're obviously in. And I think that's really how we have to look at it. It's just part of the ecosystem.
Yeah. It's interesting because I currently belong to two pretty big gym chains and both of them have options like what you're talking about, but I've seen nothing about, hey, if you're interested, you know, come talk to us. All I ever get from them is flyers on, you know, recommending more and more people to join because, and this one in gym in particular, just completely swamped. Like, I don't know how they could fit any more people in the rooms. What do you see as an effective way for a gym to introduce this sort of holistic treatment?
The chances are you're probably talking about an HVLP model. I mean, that's going to be the high volume, low price model. And so they don't have the people to educate it, right? So if you're not built with a business model that provides service, then it becomes, in my opinion, a check in the box. We've got a basketball court. We've got a swimming pool. We've got recovery, right? We've got childcare. And so they're still selling on nuts and bolts, right?
Okay.
Ultimately, at the end of the day, if you want to sell a service, I think you still have to have people at this stage of the game, especially when it's a new service, right? Because you can't necessarily understand the questions. Everyone's a little bit different and unique. And so anytime I've done that, and having, I started in the club business, you know, back in the day on the fitness side, and I still probably rooted in that. And we were very successful with our people, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that still will hold true with new services like recovery. And so dedicated spaces obviously was one of the key things. When I worked on this last club up in Boston, we didn't have the recovery studio, and I came in and looked at it and I was like, wait a minute, this is something new that's coming. And initially the conversation was, well, we could design it here, which was in somewhat of the open common area. And I said, no, it has to be a service, just like our studio is a service, just like our juice bar is a service, and so on and so forth. And you've got to treat it that way.
Yeah. Is this why, I know Stretch Labs is a huge franchise. They're popping up all over. I'm in Queen Creek, Arizona, and this whole area is really building up rapidly. And there's all kinds of things that are, you know, showing up. There's a number of studios, one literally around the corner from me. It's very small, but the Stretch Labs, do you see that as like something you think would be better is to have it like separate, like these recovery centers versus having it merged into a fitness gym?
Yeah, the $1 million question, right? I think it has to do with the phase within what an industry is in, right? When a new industry comes out, a lot of the bigger sort of boxes per se aren't going to take those things in immediately. So you've got this opportunity where people launch these individual sort of like specific niched offerings. Mm-hmm. And then in the gym business, the higher priced, amenity rich sort of facilities, in my opinion, that's their business. Their business is to be a community and a one-stop shop for everybody, right? So that makes a ton of sense. So when I look at this, I actually segment the market, right? I go high price, low price, utility value, highly amenity rich, right? And so boutique sits in the high price utility specialized market. High price amenity rich is sort of the Equinox's, country clubs, sort of like big boxes. And then HVLP is that low price specialized. It's not the same answer for all. Mm-hmm. And you have to decide which quadrant you're in my opinion. And then that's basically how that decision gets made, whether we actually specialize in that or whether we incorporate it in. I don't think HVLP can incorporate everything in, and they've got to be very specific within like what they're good at. Otherwise, they're just a check in the box and you might get what, a 1% capture rate? Who knows, right?
Yeah, because I don't even know what this one gym I belong to. I see the rooms. They have like cameras in them. They have, you know, you can walk by and see. There's like a, I don't even know what they are. But they also have a movie theater, which is pretty interesting. I kind of like that because they have the cardio equipment in the movie theater. It's not like you just sit there with popcorn. I mean, you're working out, but I've tried it a couple times, but I find that it's very distracting. Like I have to do, if I'm watching a movie, I don't want to be working out. So I haven't like really used it that much.
Well, that's an insight I've lightly touched on, which I think this plays out. So as an industry evolves, we become more technology rich, AI, personalized. And what I always say is when technology makes things more convenient and gets closer to the experience that you've had in a physical world, you know, people obviously move down to that, right? That's just the on-demand world we live in. Convenience is a key factor. As that happens and you start to take people out of the physical world, it actually creates a drawback into an experiential world where people go for experiences, right? Because we're grass is always greener sort of a world we live in, right?
Yeah.
So experiential will be another rising market in our space. And that's going to mean the sort of just plain vanilla box isn't really going to do it. I think I wrote a post one time and I said, boring gyms are dead, right? Mm-hmm. Probably true, right? At that point, you're competing on price.
Right. So what would be another example? So experiential, would that be like the movie theater kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly. So experiential could be, it's sensory immersion, right? And so lights, cameras, there's a variety of different things that sort of play into that. So I worked on another project. I'll give you some insights here. When VR first came out, I was approached with it, right? and because I have came from the gaming background as it relates to our, introducing gaming to our space. And I was like, 40% of people had vestibular issues. I was like, I get it. I don't get how I could create a product that 40% of the people get sick about with, you know? And so I like the idea a lot. And so I got to thinking about it and I went to the theme parks because I'm in Orlando, or in Florida. And I walked into this one where there was a 180 degree dome. And it was this sort of like sensory immersion experience in theme parks, right? I was like, this is cool. I was like, what if I had a yoga instructor in the middle and a bunch of people around and the dome was the experience? Because I didn't have glasses on, but it was more like reality with augmented reality. Okay. But I'm not actually going to wear anything to augment it. So I worked on a project for that actually before. And so that's experiential, right? You walk into a dome and you can turn that place into LA, Australia, and Las Vegas. And you can have an experience where you're in that world because that's what theme parks do. They bring you to those worlds, right? And at the time, this is pre-pandemic, the travel industry with wellness tourism or adventure travel was booming, right? And I was like, what if I could bring it here? And so those are the types of experiences where I think people are going to start to look outside the box and be like, why do people go to theme parks? Why do people go to movie theaters? What is escapism, right? Do I want escapism in my brand? Do I want it in my product? Retail, experiential retail, look at some of the Topgolf, look at entertainment, right? I mean, all these markets exist over there and we still haven't really figured it out on the fitness side.
Yeah.
People will.
That's so interesting. Yeah. And it's funny what you say about VR. I got my husband one of those just for, like, we like to go to different places, but we hate the travel process. So I said, here, put this on. You can go wherever you want. And so he loves it. But I put it on and I can't use it. I have it like an instant panic attack. Like, I don't know where I am. I hate the feeling. And I keep trying it. And I've looked it up. And there's a lot of people that are saying that they have the same reaction. And like, I'm glad he can use it, but I can't. I mean, have you ever heard that? Like, yeah, you know, I just
the panic attack piece. Well, haven't heard about the
like anxiety. Like, I don't know where I am because your brain is telling you you're somewhere where you're not. And it just,
I could see how that could be for some people. The part that I just couldn't get over was the vestibular part, right? I mean, imagine a product where that percentage of people sort of like got nausea, right? Because if you've never sort of experienced that, when you get sick off of a ride at the theme park, that's a vestibular issue, right?
Yeah.
And so, my understanding is it's improved. I'm not sure to what extent, you know? And so it's a question of VR versus AR, but mixed reality is obviously another key part of experiential, right? Mm-hmm. Like I should be able to tour the club from my home, right?
Oh, right.
Just put on those. There's so many different ways that you can use it that doesn't have to necessarily be internal.
Yeah.
So when you look at the associated budgets that are going to be putting into that sort of like VR world, VR stores, experiential, it's pretty high in other industries.
And it's interesting too, because I see that one of the gyms that I go to, they have like an outdoor part, which is actually, it's all screened in, of course, but it's, they call it the yard. And it gives you, I mean, it's this on a much lesser level. Like you're actually outside, but you're not outside, but they have equipment there. Well, I guess it's like Venice Beach, you know, in California. So you're on the beach and you're working out. I think it'll be interesting to see what works and what doesn't. Like, I don't want to be in the sun working out personally. You know, this has gotten to be such a thing. And I think like the movie theater in this one gym is sort of a modified version where I'm watching a movie. I know I'm watching a movie. It's not VR. So I can handle that kind of thing. Is that where you think, like, what else do you see as coming up as like trends in fitness? So you mentioned a few of them already. Is there anything?
Yeah, you can't not talk about AI, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I kind of look at the world right now as there's multitude of things, but we have really two huge waves that we've got to figure out. Number one is we've got this sort of integration of healthcare, or we'll call weight loss drugs and GLP-1 and everything that trends behind that from a well-being perspective. I call that sort of like the engineered well-being world, and I'll kind of talk about that in a second, but then on the other side, you've got AI and technology, right? And that's sort of like efficiency within the business. That's also eating away as it relates to roles and jobs. And so you've got these two things that have to be sort of figured out, and everybody's working on it. But I think the hard thing to do right now is it's really tough to figure out where the puck lands. Mm-hmm. And maybe the reason why is because we've got multiple pucks.
So like with AI, how do you see that being merged into the whole fitness and holistic and wellness world? Like, where do you think it's, because I think with so many of these things, yeah, they become, everyone's like talking about AI, and then at some point they're going to find like the balance with it. Do you think that's going to happen, or is it just going to keep taking off and changing everything until we're all a bunch of robots?
Yeah, good question. So I think there's some technologies that follow pretty standard trends, but then there's some that don't. And the one that didn't was this, right? The phone bucked most of the systems. And they called it the power of the pocket, right? A lot of technology goes up, goes down, goes up, goes down. What's in the air goes underground. What's under the ground goes in the air. And AI will be the same way. AI will change the trends. We are, as of now, from the latest I've seen, we're 2029 with AGI and superintelligence, which kind of gets the AI to the level of you and me, which before that was further forecasted a trend. And we don't know what that world looks like, right? Mm-hmm. But I know when I've had the conversation with various fitness brands and products and clubs on how to integrate, I sort of said this. I've said, number one, I think it's safe to assume, and you should use the phrase of like, AI is not going to replace you, but the person using AI will, right? How do I use it and how do I integrate it in? It all comes back to customer. And so I always ask everybody, who's your customer? Who's your ideal customer? Mm-hmm. Who's your future customer? Because you're just using technology to improve the customer at the end of the day, right? Or give them a better business model or have a better cost model, whatever it is. And then the way that I've worked about the integration is I've said, just take your existing team, ask them to find 33, maybe 40% of the roles they do where they can use AI tools. Have them do it, because what you're trying to do is instill the culture of utilizing tools. Mm-hmm. That's going to make them more efficient. That one person can now work two roles per se, right? Then from there, they'll then start to deliver you the AI objectives, solutions, strategy, whatever it is, that allows you to think about, how do I now take this and potentially interact with my product to my consumer, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you all of a sudden just put it right in your product and you got your team under here who's not even using it themselves, you're going to have a disconnect with your culture, right? So culture up, out. And so I think that's how it's going to play out. And most organizations, from what I see, about 50 some odd percent, I think it's the last post I did, are actively training people with the utilization of AI with internal operations. And then obviously you've got a multitude of people who are using them in products, but I think it goes internal operations out to products. And then obviously from there, it's the world.
Yeah. Do you see a negative impact? I mean, there's always a negative impact to all of this. I mean, do you see anything overtly negative that could happen?
Yeah. Jobs where there's not much value created will be cut. The number that, and I have to recall because I post a lot of stuff on this, I believe the net gain minus the AI replacement of jobs is 12 million. So we actually still net more jobs because new jobs are created, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think right now is an extremely important time to invest in yourself. I think right now is an extremely important time to use it. And ultimately, I think you'll find how you navigate through that.
What do you think as far as AI with, for the consumer? I'm just thinking, I'm kind of running through my mind, like, how we do you use fitness? And like you mentioned briefly about, you know, weight loss drugs. Is there, I just always cringe when I see something about, you know, 60-second abs or something that's like, you just know you can't get the results from doing such a little thing. Like, is that something that you think is going to kind of trick people into, and I don't even know exactly what I'm just kind of brainstorming here. Like, is there a way that it's going to make people get lazy? Like with these weight loss drugs, whatever happened to really just hunkering down on getting your fitness in line? And have we just given up?
We live in a convenient world, right? And so if you think about it, what we're selling in fitness is we're asking people to come do something that's hard.
Yeah.
We're asking them to invest time into that. And so if you went and you did hard things and didn't see the benefit, how long would you do it?
Not very. Yeah.
Yeah. And so we lack discipline and motivation in the world. And that's just sort of across the spectrum, in my opinion. And so I think that I don't think it's those things that make them lazy, because I'm more of a person where I believe you have make your own choices, that those make you, right? The sum of the choices and decisions you have made is where you are, and you should accept that.
Okay.
And I know technology makes things easier, right? And so that's sort of like the chicken or the egg, right? But I think if we continue to make things easier, I think people are just going to choose the easy route. I don't know how you change that. Outside of people make decisions in pain or pleasure. Mm-hmm. So I think we might have to make things a little more painful, because we know what pleasure does, just makes them lazier.
Right. Well, I think part of what you were talking about with having an experience that is pleasurable at the gym or at the fitness studio would help. Cause I know when I, you know, people would always ask me, how can I get motivated to work out? And I always tell them, you need to have something that you look forward to within your workout. Because going into a room with a bunch of sweaty people and lifting heavy things is not like outwardly appealing. But if you go with a friend, you know, that's the thing that we say. But you have to find a friend that's motivated, because people find friends that are as lazy as they are. No, they never go. Or your mm-hmm. music, you know, something like that.
Right. Yeah. So one of the things that I think is interesting as I thought about this was, I think people do more when they actually have like an actual goal. Like if you're getting married, right? Mm-hmm. Most people just go through that. If you're going on a trip, specifically where you're going to be in a swimsuit, right? If you're training for a climbing Mount Everest, right? Mm-hmm. So those sorts of things, I think, are what really motivate people. When I say motivate people is it keeps them going through the hard stuff.
Yeah.
Because they've got something end in mind. And so I have seen, I don't have any data on that, but I've seen a direct correlation to that with people that I know in my circle, as well as when I look at other people. And so it's just kind of goal setting, isn't it?
But then what happens when a goal is achieved? Like you've gotten married, you've, you know, gone on your trip.
After people get married, what do? They gain weight, right? So, but they need to continuously have these sorts of things. That's the sort of like engagement gamification of the world, right? You know, in gamification, there's levels, you get rewards, and that's why gamification is a thing, right? That's why people try to implement that in their product, because they're trying to motivate somebody to keep using and going through that journey.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, I've been around long enough to know, you know, when Flashdance was a thing and everyone, like there's so many phases of fitness that have happened. And mm-hmm. it's a matter of finding something. Like I've been working out for so long, and there have been times I'd get frustrated, but if I changed what I did, I would tell people, work out a different time of day. I mean, just do anything, just change it up, you know, make it new. That seems to help a lot. Well, this has been a great conversation. Do you have any final words, like for people to keep in mind about, you know, where you see the whole fitness industry going?
Yeah, I guess the only thing that comes to mind for me is that you got to stay on top of the trends, because trends sort of point to you where the innovation's at. I've always been an innovation guy. The downside of that is I've been early. Timing matters just as much as knowing where things are going. And then last but not least is that once you understand that, like just break down those insights to inform that strategy that you're going to sort of deploy in this. I'll tell you this. I meet way too many people who are like, oh yeah, I innovate. I'm like, what'd you do? They're like, well, we did this one thing and it just didn't work. And I'm like, cool. You start with 10, you go to 9, you go to 8, you go to 7, you go to 6, you go to 5, you go to 4, you go to 3, you go to 2, to go to 1. You don't just do one thing and think it's going to work. It's no different than ads. The average ad agency is running 11 pieces of creative. So when somebody's like, yeah, I went to TikTok, it didn't work. I was like, cool, what'd you run? They're like, we ran a set of ads, two ads. I'm like, that's not how it works. It's the same thing when you've gone through change, right? And so that's the last thing that I would probably say is like, test, fail. Some people like fail fast. Some people don't. Whatever. It is what it is. You know, 9 no's gets you to your 10th yes, or to your 1 yes and your 10th.
Yeah. Don't give up right away. It's like with fitness, if it's a personal thing or even on the business side. So, well, where can people find you if they want to reach out to you and find out more?
Yeah, for sure. So I am pretty active on LinkedIn. So LinkedIn, it's Mike G. Hansen. And then I have a website, MikeGHansen.com, and all my contact details and bookings are there.
Awesome. We'll put that in the show notes. Thanks so much, Mike. I really appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. Thanks, Linda.
And that's a wrap for today's episode. We hope you found it informative, thought-provoking, and engaging. If so, please share it with your friends and colleagues who might also be interested in marketing and copywriting trends and innovations. And remember, if you haven't already, please subscribe to the B2B Marketing and Copywriting Podcast on your favorite podcast platform and on our YouTube channel so you never miss an episode. We'll be back next week with another show, so stay tuned.